You're listening to Careers and Cocktails, Career Talk with a Twist, hosted by expert recruiter Renee Fry. Let's get this party started.
Hey, party people. Today I come to you from my home office. Because during this COVID-19, we all have to protect ourselves and stay home. So today I am making my favorite cocktail, which we have named Paradise. What it is, it's a martini, and the ingredients are 2 ounces of pear vodka, and I'm going to use Grey Goose, La Poire, 1 ounce elderberry, and I'm gonna use Saint Germain, 1.5 ounce lemon sour, and I just have this Powell and Mahoney cocktail mixer, and then just a splash of Prosecco, Cava, or any bubbly you wanna pour on the top. So I have my ice in a shaker, and I pre-measured out my vodka, so I have 2 ounces of Grey Goose pear going into my shaker, and I'm going to add the 1 ounce of elderberry, which I actually have the wrong measurement. I was gonna put 1 tablespoon. We can't have that. It won't taste the best. All right, I got 1 ounce of Saint Germain, adding that into my shaker. And then 1.5 ounce of lemon sour. Perfect. Pour that into my shaker. We are gonna shake it up, and I have this beautiful Rita martini glass that I'm so excited to use. Rita glassware is my favorite. All right, we got that all shaken up. Strain it through so there's no ice going right into my martini cup. And this is my favorite cocktail because it is one so easy to drink, which should be the case. However, the flavors are just delicious. Saint Germain and the pear vodka. It's really a pear martini, but it's phenomenal. So let me get this going. We're gonna open this, and then we're just gonna top it with a splash of Prosecco. And there you have it. I don't have any pretty flower garnish or anything, so next time I'll do that. But cheers. Oh, so good. I hope you enjoy that one.
Hey, party people. Welcome back to Careers and Cocktails. Today, I'm thrilled to have Catherine St. Peter joining us. And we are doing this via Zoom because during these unprecedented times with COVID-19, we all need to stay at home and be safe. So I'm drinking a pear vana, which is a pear martini. And Catherine, what do you have in your glass?
Your pear martini sounds delicious. I have Gosling ginger beer and Kenny's key lime juice. It's a mocktail, but I have it in a Rito glass because I know how much you love them.
So cheers. You'll have to send me the recipe for that because I love key lime, and that I would throw some tequila in there. I'd be in heaven.
The flavors are Moscow Mule inspired. So yes, definitely.
I love it. So Catherine, give us a little bit about you. Give us your elevator speech. Who are you?
Yeah, I have been in talent acquisition since I was a very young person. It started out in college at an amusement park and have kind of been in recruiting and program management for talent acquisition ever since. I've worked in a lot of different industries. I've been fortunate enough. You and I met in 2007, I think it was, when I worked for an ethanol company out in the Midwest. And yeah, so that's my elevator pitch.
Awesome. Which it's crazy that you remember the year. And I was just thinking that is like the true power of networking because you and I physically haven't seen each other during that period of time, but we managed to stay connected through LinkedIn and email and other avenues. So
absolutely.
It's incredible. So if you could choose anyone to come on your party bus, they have to be famous, they have to be alive, who would it be?
Oh, I was going to say because of COVID-19, everybody's coming on the bus.
Yeah, we have to get
the I'm going to hug everyone. Okay, so Alive, then Oprah.
I do love Oprah. She'd be a hoot. So, Catherine, what can we celebrate for you this week?
I'm celebrating health.
Absolutely. Cheers to that.
Cheers to health. Salud.
Now, I want to ask you a little bit about employment branding. Why is it so important? Can you share who does it well and how companies can improve and enhance their employment brand to attract, you know, applicants and more future employees?
Yeah, absolutely. So really, employment brand is taking your consumer brand, if you have one, and really parlaying that into the employee audience. So companies that do it really well obviously have a known brand like the Nikes and the Home Depots of the world. But even Stryker Medical, who's not well known, does it well. They focus on the mission of the organization. They focus on how it helps the global world, if you will, and then how jobs within that organization might help the total package. So they really, it's all encompassing. It tells people, you know, who we are, what we stand for, and then it makes them want to be a part of that journey.
Right. And have you seen some shifts in employment branding with the millennials, you know, entering the workforce? And what does that shift look like?
For sure. I definitely see with the millennials, you see a lot more philanthropic work, what companies are doing to, again, benefit that global health, if you will, holistic health. Companies like Rothy's, who I love, which have great shoes made from recycled plastic bottles.
Oh, I didn't know it was recycled plastic bottles.
Oh my gosh, yes, girl. I will send you a referral link so I can get $20 off and you can get
awesome. $20 off. Cheers to that. I love shoes.
Exactly. So you see a lot more focused on philanthropic things. So if by chance they have community involvement where you can, you know, take 8 hours of your work day and do something in your community, or a lot more work-life balance focus. So like, for instance, if they have shifts that are not necessarily the traditional 8 to 5 or 9 to 5 or something like that, and they work 7 to 3:30, so you can incorporate your family life into your work life, that's becoming more attractive. Obviously also too, if they have remote opportunities, but then also the trajectory of the jobs. So millennials want to know, how long will they stay in this position? What's their next position if they go into this position? How long, what's that timeline look like? And that sort of thing. So it's really talking to their sweet spots, if you will.
I love it. I love how in my career, seeing the evolution of how companies try to attract talent. And I'm grateful for the millennials because we all got to get back to our core values and,
sure,
you know what I mean? And the work-life balance. Yeah. So Catherine, you have interviewed, I'm sure, thousands of people, asked millions of questions. What's your favorite interview question to ask and why?
So I have two. I thought about this hard. I was like, can I narrow it down to one? But it really is two. It's the number one is, why are you interested in the role? Because it really tells me what kind of research they've done. If they understand the role, did we write the job description well enough so they understand the role? And what they think that they can bring to the table for the role. The other one is, describe for me the failure in your career.
That's because one of my favorites too.
Yeah, absolutely. It really says their line of thinking. It talks about the lessons they've learned, you know, how they go forward in their career with that knowledge. You can really touch on a lot of buttons with those two.
Yeah, those are great questions. I totally agree. So what about in a perfect world, what would your preferred interview process look like? I've got clients, I'm sure you've worked with employers, who draw out this 5-step interview process. What should a successful one look like?
Yeah, certainly. And obviously we've talked about this a little bit too. The level of the role will obviously dictate that. So if you're going for your CEO of a large company, it might look a little bit more comprehensive. Sure. But just in general, you know, a video interview like this, a video conversation would be great for that first round if you can do that as opposed to a phone screen. And then the second one would be an in-person interview, at most 5 people. It would be great if it could all happen at one time. So that way everybody is kind of hearing the other people ask the questions, listening to the answers, not focused on what they're going to ask next, that sort of thing. But if it can't happen in a panel, as much of that as possible. Because also, too, you don't want to, if you have multiple interviews the same day, sometimes what happens is the people are asking the same questions. So literally by the third or fourth interview, the candidate has answered the same five questions and gotten, there hasn't been a lot of context.
Right, right. And then after those interviews occur, do you recommend how soon after should the interview team gather to recap?
So I did have a perfect world scenario in my career. And so after our last candidate, we would do a candidate debrief immediately. So I would just go ahead and put it on their calendars almost right after the last person said goodbye and we bid farewell. We had little mini debriefs along the way, but we really didn't get too comprehensive because we wanted the whole collective group of candidates to discuss. But as soon as you can have it, the better. I mean, the information's fresher, the quicker you can get back to the candidate and let them know what's going on. Just debriefs are so important. And also too, I love this. I recently heard this technique where people just immediately do a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And then the people who thumbs up, the positives go first. So that way the negatives don't have like a bandwagon effect, if you will. And they can share why they were positives.
Absolutely. So any tips with people that interview how to remove bias? I mean, bias is difficult, right, Catherine?
It's so difficult. The best way that I've said always is think about the context of the job. Think about the context of their work. Look at their body of work. How can they speak to what they've done best that parlays into the work you'll be hiring for? And really, at the end of the day, you know, try to eliminate, you know, where they went to school or something like that, positive or negative, and just really focus on what their daily tasks are going to be doing and how they can benefit your organization.
Yep, absolutely. I totally agree. So how can companies elevate their internal promotion process to promote people from within?
I am always talking about talent gap analysis. So what talent are you missing from your current team? And then think about, everybody always raises their hand because they want the next promotional opportunity. So if that is the case, say, okay, this is what our team is missing. And see if they step up to the plate to learn those skills. Like for instance, I recently had a conversation with one of my colleagues and she said she didn't want to be a manager because she didn't want to tell people what to do. And I said, well, does your manager really tell you what to do?
Right.
And she said, no. And I said,
like authoritarian.
Exactly. I'm like, those days are no longer here. I said, what he or she does is they say what you're doing well, and then opportunities where you could work on to improve. And really that's the same sort of thing. Like have more coaching opportunities within your team and say, okay, this is what you need to take that next career step.
I love that. That's great advice, Catherine. So what's the most difficult position you've recruited for? People always ask me this.
Yeah. So it was one in the healthcare industry back in the day when HIPAA first came about, because
I
knew what HIPAA was and everybody was like, what, HIPAA? And I said, no. So there was a lot of explaining to that. But then also to looking at what other companies did similar things. So regulation, privacy. And then kind of diving deep into that. But I really like any role that's maybe new to the organization, because then you're thinking about where the company's going or new market share, something like that. That's always fun for me.
Right. Well, and that, when you're taking on a brand new, newly created position, then you have to really influence on what the requirements are, right?
Absolutely. And it also is a great way to gain alignment with the team so they all understand, oh, this job's doing that? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. So what, on the flip side, what's your favorite industry or profile to recruit for?
We've recruited for a lot of different things. so there really isn't any favorites per se. Obviously, CPGs make it easier because then you can point to a brand and people immediately have that connection. But I'm such a curious person by nature that I just like digging into whether it's the job or whether it's the background that got somebody to that level of position or something like that. I just kind of let the work take me where it needs to go.
Right. You're just like me. I absolutely am so curious too. I love that. I absolutely love that dimension of talent acquisition.
Mm-hmm.
So what tips can you share for our listeners who might be in that job search mode when they're interviewing? What tips do you, what are your best tips?
So it sounds odd to say, but even though they're going into the space with their needs, they need to recognize that the hiring manager has needs too, and they're entering into a partnership with this individual. And so a part of their job is to make that individual look good in their job. So that's something that people forget a lot of times when they're interviewing, because they're thinking about what's in it for me, how can I grow, that sort of thing. And I used to have a manager who I just adore, and she would always say at the end of the call, what can I do to make your job easier? And so we'd have that conversation. But then on the converse, I said, what do I need to do to make your job easier? And so it's knowing that there's that healthy balance of you're working together in this partnership to make the company greater.
Absolutely. That's a huge value bomb that I actually think I learned that midway through my career. And that question is so impressive in any, even if you're gainfully employed, when you turn to ask your leader, what can I do to best support you? You're like the shining star on the team. It really sets you apart. So awesome, awesome, awesome.
I love value bomb.
Yeah, cheers to that.
Exactly, cheers.
I'm missing the sound. Like, we got to figure out a way to make, maybe a pen. Let me see. That's kind of flat, whatever. So passive recruiting, meaning going after people who are gainfully employed versus people that apply to the requisitions, if you're a lucky employer to have applicant flow, how do you direct the teams that you lead to balance that?
Let the data tell you where the balance should be. So if you have a good applicant flow in certain requisitions, then keep it. However, I would look at that history and say, okay, have my last five jobs been all people who've applied to us? And then if that's the case, then maybe you start pursuing some passive candidates to get some different perspective into the role. If you have positions that are hard to fill, and that you know that you always have a longer average time to fill, then those are the ones you want to start pipelining. Those are the ones you start looking at the passive candidates, and you look at, you know, their companies, where they are, who's doing what well that you know that's going to be in that market for your job, next job.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. How about job descriptions? You know, there's very few companies that get it right and write them well. What are your tips for crafting a dynamite job description, Catherine?
Yeah, certainly you want to first go out the gate with why work here. Why are we great? And then you want to really, again, speak to what they're going to be doing on a daily basis, the trajectory for the role, and then how that role fits the bottom line. Because people want to see, not everybody works for a CPG company where they see their products on the shelf, or not every project that you work on is going to make it to the finish line. You know, budget might cut it, what have you. The work could be canceled, who knows. But if you can tell them how their daily work or how their quarterly work or however your company works, how it fits into the bottom line and to the overall scope of the organization, that's super helpful for a person. And that's when they, again, gain that sort of that branding piece and really focuses on why they want to be there, and that they can see that it's a results-driven company and their work matters.
Yeah, exactly. I've really seen job descriptions that people are really getting innovative about them, and they're not so cut and dry and boring. So I really love seeing the evolution that I've been able to witness over my recruiting career.
Also too, one other thing you made me think of is if you can add the process in the job description itself. So this is what our hiring process looks like. You'll have a video interview, an on-site interview, maybe an assessment, and then we'll have, you know, your hire. And we expect for this process to last this amount of time. That is huge for the candidate because they can like plan out their life.
Absolutely. I love that. More value bombs. Cheers. So what's the most innovative thing you've implemented or done in talent acquisition?
I hate to use this one because it was so long ago in my career, but it's a good one. And I just had a lot of freedom and liberty in this particular role. But I worked a long time ago, I worked for a technology company. And it was a relatively small organization, and it was male-dominated, and they were all in fantasy football, and this was before fantasy football has become what it is today.
Sure.
And so what I did was I made an employee referral campaign, but also to a sales and marketing campaign that was based on these groups they were already in as associates. And I would say, okay, and I had like a football map and everybody got to give their team names. And so I'd say, okay, this person brought in this resume. That means they gained 7 yards. And this person brought in a referral for an opportunity business lead and it gained this many yards. It was shocking how people got into this. I mean, They were super competitive. They got to see what was going on. They had bragging rights. We did a weekly kind of, this is who's doing well. We went from getting like 5 employee referrals to like 75 in a week time.
Oh.
I mean, and it lasted, and it was all, this is dating myself, but it was all right before pre-Y2K, where everybody thought that the world was going to end. So we really needed a lot of help in that IT space. And so it just went gangbusters. It was a lot of fun. It certainly, I've had others since then. But that one was really like what I'm proud of.
That is so cool. And I was talking to somebody else and they're like, if they're into games, if you gamify something, people just get into it, you know? So that's incredible. Cheers to that, Catherine.
Yeah. Who knew gamification was so popular, but I love my Fitbit. So there you go.
Right. Well, and not only that, you were driving in revenue for the company by tagging it along with the sales. So that's even thinking, you know, broad company. So your role isn't just talent acquisition there. You really were thinking big there. That's awesome. So where do you get your inspiration from? Are there people that you follow or listen to that our audience can benefit from?
Obviously, I listened to tune into your podcast. So there's that. But I'm a learning junkie. So I'll just say in the last 7 days who I've listened to, aside from you, David Goggins, who's a former Navy SEAL, who wrote the book Can't Hurt Me. And then Dr. Brené Brown. She's been in my ear a lot lately.
She's one of my faves. I think I've read every single book that she's published.
Yeah, so that's just in the last 7 days, but it's so funny. I listen to things while I'm walking, and I try to get my 10,000 steps in, so there's a lot of listening, but I look at my, like, Audible and in my podcast, and I'm just like, ooh, this is diverse.
That's good, though. It's fun to have diversity.
Yeah.
And what's the best advice you can share for our listeners?
You know, if you can get granular on what your perfect day looks like, and then try to spend time in that space, whether you're getting paid for it or not. And suddenly the opportunities for how you might get paid in that space start to present themselves. So for instance, I have to be outside as much as possible. I enjoy writing. So it's like, what can I do for my organization? You know, is it write job descriptions? Is it writing training programs for our recruiters? Is it that sort of thing? So it's creating that perfect day as close as possible within the scope of what I do for a living. And then maybe, you know, my 40-hour week or however many hours, 160, I think, is in a week, you know, will look as close to my perfection as possible. But it also tells me what I like to do and what I don't like to do. So when I think about new areas of opportunity for me, I know, okay, I don't like doing that. You know, that sort of thing. And it helps just kind of drive it. It really brings a lot of joy.
Right. But how do our listeners, because I know there's some out there that have this, they've been in their position, they have this tunnel vision, right? And they're like, but Catherine, I can't see my perfect day. How do you get them to take the blinders off and envision that?
Start thinking about just what. Okay, this is a good one. Because Dr. Brené Brown mentioned this in her podcast. She hates administrative paperwork. So she says, if I get 14 emails that say something's going to get cut off, then I finally, you know, will respond. That's called eating the frog. So if you know that something is your Achilles all the time, on the converse, what's the thing that you love to do? What's the one thing out of your job that feels the most fun to you? Mm-hmm. It requires the least amount of energy. You don't exhale when you get an email about X. That's where you kind of start. And then you say, okay, I really like doing this in my job. Mm-hmm. And then start, you know, maybe it's 5% of your work. Okay, how can you get it to 10? How can you get it to 20? Is there a job out there where it's 100%? Mm-hmm. You know, start thinking about that. I think we're really, with those blinders on, we're really limiting our opportunities. And so sometimes you have to make a lateral move in your career to find out something about yourself, learn something different about the organization, find out you might like something better, find out you might not like, you know, X, Y, Z, whatever that looks like. But I think we come in with this kind of, like you said, tunnel vision of this is where I need to be. And really it needs to be more like this.
Right.
And again, dissect your day as much as you can and find out what makes, for me, it's my shoulders raise up to my ears and I go, if it does this, then that's not what I want to do 100% of the time. But if I dive right into it and I have fun with it and that's the project that I want to work on the most or something like that, then that's where my passion starts to lie. And it's those little things. Don't think that it's going to make you want to do cartwheels every time. But if it's just that level of enthusiasm about that particular thing, then do that. I recently watched a podcast with someone from Harvard, and she was in the consulting world, and she loved baking, and she was just like, why am I doing this consulting thing when I clearly love baking? And she's like, I went to Harvard. Everybody thinks I should be in consulting. Everything I should stay in consulting. And she said, finally, when she just said, you know what, I'm just going to try this baking thing and see how it goes. Then it no longer became a job. She loved every day, you know, that sort of thing.
Absolutely. And then she was probably extremely joyful and happy.
Exactly.
Yep. Which I am grateful. I found my passion early.
I am too. I mean, we're curious people. So recruiting is kind of like reporting in a different way. We're always asking questions.
Right. Exactly. And with that, obviously everyone needs to just keep an open mind and be open to the opportunities because everything is out there waiting for them.
So for sure.
I'm so grateful that you were able to join me and so good to see your happy smiley face. Where can everyone find you, Catherine?
I have a webpage. It's Catherine St. Peter, KatherineStPeter.com.
Awesome. And until next time, cheers.
Cheers.
For all of you hiring leaders who want the secrets to finding the best talent, you can go to careersandcocktails.com. For you job seekers who need a little boost to love your Mondays, you can also go to careersandcocktails.com to find where to purchase my book, I Hate Mondays. And I would be forever grateful if you would rate us on iTunes. We have listeners all over the world, and I'm super grateful for all of you. Until next time, cheers.